Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
trade as a weapon, something to have a rethink about. So as people would know, that the world economy is slowing down as America and China have a little bit of a tip to, for a tapped biff. And when you really come to think of it, there is really no fairness in trade, in terms of that you get a powerful country and a less powerful country, and the more powerful country tends to set trade, its own trade terms, such that it profits and the other one survives. That's sort of just the nature of human interactions. I was sort of aware at several points that the United States is putting the thumbscrews on China, and China's putting the thumbscrews on the Tibetans and the Uyghurs, and everyone's putting thumbscrews on everybody else. And the weapon of choice, rather than diplomacy, is just out and out control of trade. And in a certain sense, the World Trade Organization is toothless, and it gives across, and often throughout history, well-meaning conventions are in fact toothless. I can't know more than the post-World War I restriction on battleships, and Japanese would produce a huge battleship, three times larger than would possibly be authorized, and the Americans would say, what about that? That's a huge satellite. That's 300 meters long, and it should only be, it won't be 300 meters long, it's 150 meters long, it should only be maximum 75 meters. And the Japanese say, what are you talking about? And they just deny point blank in front of you. So it's when powers want to do things, that they do things because they're powerful. Now, I had sort of I wasn't expecting this insight, and so this insight sort of came across. I was reading, and I'm still halfway through, reading paraphrasing the American Revolution, and there's various issues that the concept of trade really sparked the revolution. It was just like, if you had two components, one is Britain being France and being too successful, and the French leaving North America left a power vacuum, and the British didn't have the resources to fill the power vacuum without raising taxes. And both raising taxes, they did this through looking at trade, and so they tried to put on certain taxes, and putting taxes on various things, there's a power imbalance there. The British would come over there with their troops. Of course, they had the only land army there. The American settlers had nothing. They were colonists. Their job was there to survive the winters and to colonize and make money. But the entire aspect of what was going on, the entire idea of America, was it was a trading country. The idea that it was supposed to be into a exclusive trade kitten, a supply of resources and a buying of goods, which Britain could value add. Britain didn't have the resources there. The US had the resources. Britain only had the ability to value add things. And so if you've got a value add economy, you've got Britain coming up. So early on, there was this sequence of, I suppose, trade wars, where Britain said, you have to trade with us. The Americans didn't trade with it, so they disobeyed the rules. Now, Britain set the rules, and they disobeyed the rules. When they tried to enforce the rules, they said, oh, well, you've never enforced the rules, we're a bit uncomfortable with this, and they just looked for the nearest thing about, you know, we have rights, and, you know, what? Oh, yeah, we have rights not to be taxed. Britain was a bit confused by this, but then America had no way to resist this, and so what they did is they sort of sanctioned Britain back and refused to buy British goods. And the British economy choked on it. And they did this once, and they did this twice, and possibly three times. And that what happened is that the Britain conditioned America into exerting long-range power from across the Atlantic by trade, and America basically effectively put on tariffs. This is before the first American president, mind you, and all that this type of stuff. It was still 13 colonies and not America. But they basically, their way that they could act in a non-central government is by putting on trade restrictions, and it was very effective. And it was only effective because the people with money who the trade affected are the people who had power in Parliament. So if you ask people, you know, if you put a vote to Brexit or something like that, you put a general vote, you probably wouldn't get it. It's because it's sort of like this house of cards corruption of democracy. That is an overrepresentation of industry, industrial people in governments, and then if you target industrial the pocket people of people who are extraordinarily rich and profit, if you can target that, you can actually sway and get things going. And we look at this as been going on for a long time. America is really a one-trick pony in that way. And if you look at Japan, the reason Japan actually let's have a quick look around here, what's going on here. Oh yeah, the reason Japan did what it did was that it was you can't expand, we can't be bothered sending troops over, we're just going to stop you buying oil. And so it's sort of two aspects to it. There's strategic goods that America controls, and they control it through them. Now, this is a very interesting model because if you look at it, it can actually be broken. If you recognise that this is the model of American power, not that I want to break American power, but it is important that we can actually do this. And I'm going to come here. I have to break for a short while on my way to the gym, and hopefully I'm podcasting a bit better than I used to be. Back again. We've got to just a quick break before I get to the gym to do some work. So I've only got a few more minutes, but we're reviewing the idea that trade control, belligerent trade control by an economically powerful person actually works on a country by actually working on the fact that the countries are really controlled by the rich anyway. So it's the rich versus the rich, and the poor suffer. And do we have a solution to it? And the idea that the US have been sort of habituated and trained into it and don't actually think whether this is morally correct. So I think in Iraq, people couldn't get the medicines to treat their children. And so they're sort of the top, I think 1% of the world owns 50% of the wealth of the world. It's like completely insane. So the one way of doubling the world's wealth of every individual, if you want to double it overnight, you just kill those, that 1%. But look, that aside, we've got to look at what the Trump thing is doing. And let's try and look at it at this point in time. The world economy should slow down as a way of producing less carbon. That would be a good idea. The fact that it's under stress means that it probably won't fall over naturally. So there's a whole lot of natural plus points to it. But there's not much we can do. And I think in terms of threats to the world prosperity, one is, I think, the unravelling of democracies. And we tend to select, and traditionally have selected, the weakest candidate. Well, I know that Thomas Jefferson got selected because he was perceived to be a weak candidate, and a lot of the emperors in Rome were perceived to be weak individuals themselves that could be controlled. And now we've got sort of a nightmare situation. So the major problem is how do we knock out the companies that produce the most carbon? You know, the world is going to end due to production of too much carbon. What do we do to actually finish this off? I'm just having a look at the company here. My godfather, this is supposed to be Saturday night and it's absolutely jumping at the gym. So look, my actual plan, my thesis of how you can actually survive, a strike back plan, is a trade embargo, but organized global attack on oil companies. Now, you can't attack all of the oil companies. What happens is that I would suggest that we have a list of the 500 worst companies which we want to get rid of. Yeah, the horrible people in the world, the citizens, the disenfranchised, the people who live near the sea level, things, the people who want to survive, those stupid, horrible people, what I would suggest is that you have the list of these 500 people, then you have basically those 500 companies can, if they want to, they can submit a document to you pleading for mercy, and then you just roll the barrel and put your hand in and pick out the one company, and you have the one company there, and at a particular time, Greenwich Mean Time, midnight, around the world, the company is revealed, and we have a go at getting rid of that company, but that is divesting of it, boycotting its goods, just doing anything you can against that particular company. And if that doesn't work, we say, oh, that's failed, let's get on to the next one. Or if a company responds too quickly, we can move on to another company. So what could happen is that the companies could band together, or what you need is they're beholden to market variability. We just need a more variable system. Now, the thing about Trump is he's predictable, or he's unpredictably, you know, mad. We just need something of a greater focus. It's random how it's done. So you have your 500 companies, and you select, say, BHP. We are very sorry. It's a major company in your country, but we're just going to, unfortunately, we're going to have to get rid of BHP, and we'll do it. And of course, we'll get you 6 weeks to act or change, or do it instantly, I suppose. Maybe BHP, maybe ExxonMobil, maybe one of the big US companies. Unfortunately, the big wealth of the West is built on carbon polluters. So at a certain point in time, and those carbon polluters are coming in and stifling our democracy, which we can say, we really don't want it. Can we be listened to? Can we do it? No, we can just pull you out. So essentially, it's like a rerun of the American Revolution in terms of the way, if trade war is really effective, it's the ability to strike fear into a group. So I suggested that when I talked about it, that's called market manipulation, and you can be put into jail for market manipulation if you're going to profit from it. But I would say that it's not anything secretive, it's just a free speech from around the world to, at a particular point in time, have a big barrel and see what you can do. So this is another mad idea. So you're going to put in a bank of mad ideas to go for. But some might hear it, some might not. It may be worth discussion. But at least it's my contribution to saving the planet. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.